Hey, Emily.
Hey, Stephanie.
You want to do a podcast?
Absolutely. Welcome to Cycle Chats, a podcast to destigmatize what it means to be a woman. This is episode 75, Managing PCOS. In this episode, we are speaking to a woman who is helping millennials transform their lives by helping them improve PCOS, hormones, and fertility. It's acclaimed and award-winning PCOS coach, licensed nurse, and future dietitian, Leticia Garcia Bates. Thank you so much for coming to the show. And what everyone did not hear was that this truly was third time's the charm, because I had to get it right for the award-winning coach that sits here before us. We're so excited to have you on because we've never talked about this.
I'm excited to be here. Thank you both for inviting me. I'm excited to chat with you.
Oh yeah, I can't wait to learn more. And I wish everyone could see what a gorgeous setup you have behind you, because it's perfection.
Thank you.
If your knowledge of PCOS is as good as your setup is, we are in for such a treat. So I'm excited.
Thank you. Oh my goodness.
Well, make sure to stay tuned for the reels if you do want to see her beautiful setup, because then you can actually see it.
Come visit me on Instagram and I'll show you. I'll show you my office. Maybe I should do an office tour.
Yeah, do it. Ooh, tune in for that for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can tell me all about your shiplap. Anyway, I want to kick it off, because I always like to kick it off with this question because I find it so interesting. I need to know, what made you get into this field?
So that's a really good question. And I'm going to try to condense this story so we're not here forever.
You take your time.
So I also live with PCOS. I was diagnosed with PCOS at the age of 23 after my first son was a surprise. And after having him, I had an IUD placed in, and some things were just going really, really wrong. And I had a doctor tell me, after I'd had a lot of issues, tell me that I would probably be sterile from that point on, that I couldn't do anything about it. And that was just a disheartening visit. So I found a new doctor. And as I was explaining some things, like the issues that I was having with my period, I was overweight at the time and had cystic acne on the jawline, I was just explaining a lot of things, and they diagnosed me with PCOS, which is polycystic ovary syndrome. And I'm going to be really honest, I did not do anything about it. I didn't even look it up. It was just, hey, you have PCOS, you can either take birth control or metformin, and then you just come back when you want to get pregnant again. And I just left it at that. I just kind of lived with it for, years of just, oh, this is the reason why I struggle with my weight and why my period doesn't show up without help. So it just is what it is. And then I did what my doctor said. I went back, I got a little bit of help to conceive my second son. And after having him, I'd reached my heaviest weight, and I had always, since childhood, have struggled with my weight. And I just kind of set off on this journey of, you know what, I've done all the quick fixes. It never works. I always gain the weight back. This time I'm going to do it. I don't care how long it takes, but I have got to figure out how to manage my weight and keep it off. And I did that. I actually lost 100 pounds, and I got into weightlifting, started really getting into the gym life. And by the age of 30, I decided to do something that was never in the cards for me, which is compete in bodybuilding. So I entered a bodybuilding competition after losing weight, putting on muscle. I was a figure competitor and, stepped on stage in that itty bitty bikini and the leanest, most ripped and fit physique I've ever had in my life. And to be honest with you, at that time, I knew that I had PCOS, obviously, and I was doing what everyone said. My doctor said, oh, you just need to lose some weight. It'll fix itself. I was following the directions of what everybody told me, what my trainer told me. I was just doing all the things that I was being told. And after the competition, a couple months after, things just went downhill quick. I started gaining weight rapidly, even though I didn't change my lifestyle. My digestion shut down. My hair started falling out in clumps. My period had been gone for a long time. My libido had been gone. But, in the bodybuilding realm, that's normal. So a lot of those red flags that I was seeing, I didn't think about it, because that was normal in the bodybuilding space. So essentially, after just getting so detrimentally sick to the point that I couldn't and didn't want to leave my bed most days, I'd lost all my strength. I couldn't asleep, but yet during the day I was falling asleep. Like, I felt like I was just writing a novel of all of these, like, crazy symptoms that I've never had before. And I was becoming very scared. I thought, wow, this is like something really bad is wrong with me. And so I go back to my doctor, I explain everything, and they just looked at me and said, you know, you have a history of PCOS. You probably still have it. Just keep dieting and exercising. And at that point, I had been dieting and exercising for 5 years straight. You know, I'd lost 100 pounds. Months prior, was on the stage as a bodybuilder. And I was working as a licensed nurse at the time. Like, I had some education under my belt as well. And I just thought, like, that's not the answer. Like, I'm at my limit. There's no way I could diet or exercise anymore. And I left that appointment, like, enraged, upset, like, confused, like, what is wrong with me? And so I realized, you know what, I'm going to have to take this into my own hands. And I have to figure out, like, how to turn my health around on my own. And so I was like, okay, what is this PCOS thing? Like, is it more than just what I thought it was? And so that's whenever I started really diving into the research, looking into it, reading all the books that I could. And my mind was just blown away, because PCOS is a big freaking deal. It was way bigger than I thought it was. And all of the things that it was taking me to heal my PCOS were the exact opposite of what I was told to do. So I actually needed to eat more, you know, nutritious foods. I needed to sleep more. I needed to, you know, not exercise as much as I was doing. I was reducing my caffeine intake. Like, it felt like everything that I previously was told led me into this, like, PCOS storm. And it took me nearly 3 years to get myself back to, like, a baseline health, which I would not wish on anyone. But at the time that I had started that, like, instigating, what is PCOS? Because of my own journey, I had already started, I enrolled in training to become a personal trainer. I decided, once I learned more about PCOS, I was like, you know what, I really want to go the health coaching direction, and started getting certifications in health coaching. And I left my nursing career entirely to be a health coach and opened my own business as a health coach. And the more I learned about PCOS, I started getting involved in PCOS advocacy. I started going to organizations, events, actually started advocating on a lawmaker level, so meeting Congress each year. And doing that surrounded me with some of the leading experts in this condition. And it just showed me, one, I also got to see how many, like, millions of people that are suffering with this condition. I got to see the evidence-based side of it from all of these experts in my research. And there's, like, a huge disconnect. Like, there's huge gaps in care. And that's when I decided, you know what, this is where I need to be. This is my space. This is where I can make a difference. I want to make a difference. And whenever the pandemic hit, I decided to go back to school and become a registered dietitian. So that's kind of where I'm currently at. Again, that sounds like a long, short story, but that's the short story of how I got here.
That's so great.
Wow.
I'm going to tell you that I feel like our last guest that we just interviewed with had something similar, where she went through it before she became a lawyer. And that sounds so similar, is like, you went through all sides of it. Like, you were a nurse, like, there was so much to it. What drives me bananas, and I'm sure probably drives everyone else bananas, is the fact that birth control seems to be like, you have a cold, birth control, you're poor, birth control. Like, I feel like it's the most ridiculous thing that you could think of, birth control. Why is it that, is it like, because you get a slice of it pharmaceutically, like, financially, or like, what is with this, like, constantly pushing birth control on women?
That's a really good question. And I think it's got a lot of layers to it. Currently, I kind of have maybe some unpopular opinions. So birth control is, like, the most common prescribed medication for PCOS. And I do think it's really important to, like, first.
Hormonal or not hormonal? Typically hormonal. And does that make a difference?
There is a big difference, but typically it's the hormonal version, because what they're trying to do is basically mask or band-aid, kind of cover up some of those issues that people with PCOS are coming into the office with. And so, you know, I think it's really important that, like, yes, we all need to understand that birth control doesn't fix PCOS, and there are definite, like, risks and side effects to birth control, but there's also on the flip side of it, you know, I try to be mindful that for most people, like in the state, birth control is probably the most accessible treatment option. It's probably, you know, free for a lot of people, especially if you're living, you know, maybe around or below the poverty line. Sometimes people with PCOS really struggle with quality of life because their periods are so devastating, you know, so sometimes a birth control can kind of come in and help with that, where they can get back to their daily life. And then it can also help with some of the androgens, and that may be kind of like leading like into like what PCOS is, to really understand why birth control typically gets prescribed like the most often. I think there's also a little bit of that component of doctors don't have any other options or a lot of other options. So it's kind of like, well, I can give you this birth control. It can kind of put a band-aid on it and I can send you on your way. I do think that that happens in a lot of cases as well.
Interesting. No, that's a good take on it. And I'm glad that you kind of cleared that up about like, sometimes it's the most accessible treatment option.
Yeah. And it just, you know, it just depends. Like I've met people with PCOS that feel that they could not have their daily life that they have without birth control. I've also met people who feel like it just exacerbated everything. So it's kind of like, you know, it's so case dependent. And so I just try to like look at all the different factors. And at the end of the day, I think the best option is just to be informed enough to make an informed decision. And so like talking about the non-hormonal option for people that are kind of like, you know what, I don't really want birth control to override my natural hormones, but I still want a birth control option, that like copper IUD or something like that, that's non-hormonal, is usually a really good, you know, thing to discuss with their provider and see if that's an option as well. But yeah, so with PCOS, I think it's important to understand. And I think you said before, y'all haven't spoken about PCOS before. So should I explain what that is first?
Yes, it's literally my first question, because I was like, I don't honestly even know what it stood for. So you already taught me something.
So polycystic ovary syndrome, it is essentially an endocrine disorder. And what it does, it has this like metabolic, hormonal, reproductive impact on the body. And it's typically characterized by two hallmark traits. One of them is ovulation dysfunction. So missing periods, sporadic periods, sometimes periods could be, you know, really long, like that's an array of things. And then there's also the androgen excess trait, which is our male trait hormones. And that is usually the driver to a lot of the common PCOS symptoms that people are aware of. So one of the biggest symptoms is going to be infertility. And I feel like a lot of people typically are diagnosed with PCOS once they're struggling with infertility. Other ones can be acne. So it could be cystic acne, especially on the jawline. It can even be acne on your body. You can have hair loss on the scalp, but then you may have excess hair growth in other areas. So like facial hair, body hair is a really common thing. Another thing, like talking about the skin, you could have dry skin, you could have oily skin. You can also have skin tags or darkening of the skin, like in the fold behind your neck. Like those are some really common symptoms. Another one is going to be weight management struggles. So some people with PCOS can really, they either can gain weight very easily, or they have like unexpected weight gain. You know, they haven't changed their lifestyle at all and they're gaining weight over time, or just struggling to lose weight, you know, even though despite all the efforts, it's not coming off. But I think it's really important to know that even though we have these symptoms and these characteristics, it looks different on everyone. So there's not like a look. We can't just look at someone and tell that they have PCOS. There's lean people with PCOS. There's people in heavier bodies. It's such a spectrum, which, you know, it's a syndrome. So it's just going to look different on every person. And that's the reason why the treatment options can get very confusing, because everyone wants to try to give you like, just do this and it'll help, when it might help some, but it may not help others. It can actually harm others. So you just never know. It's kind of a mixed bag of tricks there.
I mean, so earlier you said that you were basically diagnosed right there when you went into the doctor. Is that typical? Because we've spoken to a lot of people who have like endometriosis and other unfortunate symptoms and stuff that they've had in their life. So I know that Typically when we spoke to LJ, her diagnosis took like 13 years, I think. And that's a long
time. I know, like, you can be diagnosed in adolescence. So typically after the age of 12, okay. you could be diagnosed as a teen, but it typically takes years and sometimes multiple doctors. And I'm talking like 5, 6, 7 doctors to get a diagnosis. I also know of a lot of cases where people will get a diagnosis and then they'll see a different opinion and they'll take the diagnosis off, but then they end up needing it again later. And it's really unfortunate because some people believe or may think that they may think that PCOS is not that big of a deal. It is a big deal. And then two, they may think that they don't necessarily need a diagnosis. And I would argue that everyone with PCOS does need a diagnosis because it is associated with so many long-term health risks. And I don't share this to scare anyone, but it's the reality of the condition and why it's a big deal. So going back to understanding that it's actually like a endocrine disorder, so it impacts, you know, metabolism, your hormones, so many different things. Having PCOS, it increases your risk of having type 2 diabetes. Actually, 50% of people with PCOS will be pre-diabetic or type 2 diabetic by age 40. Imagine if you're on birth control until your 30s, which is not uncommon, and then you can't get a diagnosis. And then, like, I've met people who have been diagnosed with diabetes before they got the PCOS diagnosis. And these are things that if we're aware of it, we can be proactive and reduce that risk. It also increases the risk of cardiovascular disease. We're more likely to have strokes, heart attack, non-alcoholic fatty liver, lipid issues. There's so many things. And there's also, if you can imagine, something I haven't even mentioned yet is the mental health aspect of PCOS. You know, we're dealing with most people with PCOS. You know, if they're struggling with infertility, that's really traumatic and stressful. If they're struggling with some of the outward symptoms of it, you know, a lot of people will say that they feel like PCOS has stolen their femininity. And, you know, we're not exactly, like, these symptoms don't typically put us in the box of those beauty standards that helps make living in society easier. So people with PCOS are at extreme risk of having eating disorders, depression, anxiety. I believe the statistics that people with PCOS were 7 times more likely to unalive themselves compared to people without PCOS. And most of the time, if you have PCOS, you're not getting those additional health screenings to see if you're struggling with mental health. So it's important to get the diagnosis. It's just challenging because a lot of people are waiting years or they are having to go through multiple doctors and there's no like direct test. Like we can't go into an office and just get a negative or positive test for PCOS. And so it kind of falls down on that physician on whether or not they're very like well educated in the diagnostic criteria for PCOS.
So I know one of the questions that I had written down, is this something that you are bored with? Or is this something that you get later in life? And like, how would you get it if it is something
that's,
that you
that's a
get?
Really good question. And scientists have yet to figure that one out yet.
Really? So,
PCOS, there is that question of, you know, are we born with it? Is it environmental? And so what we currently know now is that there are genetic components of PCOS, so much so. And again, PCOS is a really heavy topic. So I just want to say, even though I'm talking about some of these things that feel really negative, I would love to like look on the empowering side of it. It's like, once you have the knowledge, you can do something about it. But
that's what this whole podcast is about, baby, trying to get the knowledge out there so that people can be empowered and walk through life with understanding of what's going on.
I would much rather, you know, and at least, you know, kind of have some direction of like, okay, like what do I need to do now kind of situation. But there is some genetic component. So if you have your mother with PCOS, you have a higher risk of having PCOS yourself. So if you have PCOS and, you know, you have daughters, they have an increased risk of having PCOS as well. But it's not just in our female offspring, that actually extends on to our male offspring as well. So if you are someone with PCOS and you have a son, that actually, due to it being an endocrine disorder, it can increase their risk of having insulin issues, cardiovascular disease, that like all of those metabolic things that we discussed. The first sibling, so like if you have a brother or sister and you have PCOS, their risk of having some of those metabolic issues are increased. And then there's also been some findings that, let's say that your mother doesn't have PCOS, but she has like a chronic health condition like diabetes, dad has diabetes, that can actually increase your risk as well. So we're seeing definite trends. There are certain genes, there's just not been like a very specific like, hey, you know, everyone with PCOS is born with this. There's also the environmental factors. So, you know, diet, lifestyle, endocrine disruptors, so chemicals and things like that in our environment, those can all impact it. And so there is that kind of like question of, you know, is it like genetics loads the gun and environmental pulls the trigger? So it's going to be interesting to see where science evolves on that.
Yeah, it's always, it's so interesting because things can happen tomorrow and yeah, we finally find out the answer, right? Mm-hmm. But that's crazy. Wow. I'm learning so much in taking, so I apologize the stares and the understanding as I process.
That's okay. And I think, you know, a lot of times I think people with PCOS, it can be very discouraging because you're like, you know, it's been around for a long time. Like, why is no one doing anything about it? And it's really interesting when you start looking into the academic journals and look at the science. There are a lot of things that we're not there yet on it. And something that I've shared often is whether people like this or not, and especially in our climate these days, PCOS is more political than we would like it to be. And so that kind of goes, I mentioned about being like a legislative advocate. I was not aware of this until I started doing lawmaker advocacy. Those scientists fall under what Congress is allotting money towards them to do research. And so what I mean by that is the National Institutes of Health allot so much money for research, and they were only allotting like 0.1% toward PCOS research. And so obviously, like, we're like, what? You know, there's millions of people living with this. Like, we need to understand it more so we can have better treatment and so on. And so you have a whole team of advocates that started meeting Congress to let them know, like, hey, there's lots of people living with this. You're not doing as much research as, you know, we could use and so on. That didn't start until 2017. So before 2017, Congress wasn't really well aware of this like need for PCOS, you know, to really be looked at. And so we're really behind. It was actually a formal diagnosis in 1935. In the 1990s is when we started realizing that there was like an insulin resistant component. So if you kind of look at it, I'm like, wow, like really in like the last 100 years is when the balls really started moving, and really moving in the latter part of that last 100 years, which is close to us now. So, you know, there's lots of people that do care and they're trying to figure it out, but I just feel like we're kind of behind, you know, yeah. Like we have limited resources in a sense.
2017, that's not a super long time.
5 years ago.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. It's wild, but it's interesting. I started, you know, 4 or 5 years, I forgot how many years I've been doing it now. And I remember the first time, I was actually at Congress when the pandemic hit in DC. And I remember going in and there wasn't nearly as many people that knew what PCOS was. That's usually how you start the meeting. You know, you're like, hey, like, are you familiar with PCOS? And last year, or this year, actually in 2023, every office I met, they knew about it. So that just shows you, like, in a handful of years, like the increased awareness that we've had in education. And actually, a lot of people don't realize this, talking about like the Congress aspect of it. For September is PCOS Awareness Month. It's nationally designated. That is because advocates went to Congress, asked them to sign on to that resolution, and we have to have all 50 states agree to that resolution for us to officially designate that as PCOS Awareness Month. And it has to be fought for every single year. So it's not just like a social media campaign. That was actual advocates that were saying, hey, you know, we need people to see us and like see what we're living with, and so that we can raise the volume on this condition that so many are suffering with.
I mean, the more, and we do so many of our interviews about women's health. It is such an important topic. And, you know, unfortunately, we don't know what's going on in our body. It's not like we have a magnifying glass that can go inside and right. for us to be able to right. see it. But something that I find is kind of a through line with all of these different bodily diseases and sicknesses that come is I always ask the question in the back of my head, if it was a man, would we have more money?
Yeah, that's a really good question.
Like, right? Like, if it was affecting more men, would we have more money put to it? And the answer is probably yes, right? Like, That's just the sad part of it. So it's interesting that you did mention that men are affected by it. You know, all I know about it is that women are affected. So,
well, science is changing in that area too. They're actually researching whether or not like you can have PCOS in men, ovary independent, because the name's really confusing. Because when I hear polycystic ovary syndrome, the first thing I thought of was my ovaries have these huge cysts on it.
Yes, you know, I was literally going to ask you, are there cysts on your ovaries? Is that how it manifests?
Right, right. So the interesting thing there, I think it's probably best, maybe I'll just explain the diagnostic criteria. So you can't go in and get like a negative or positive test, but there is a diagnostic criteria for them to understand or know whether or not you have PCOS. So the first thing you have to do is you have to eliminate any other possibility that could be giving you these symptoms. So hypothalamic amenorrhea is a really common one that could be like stopping your period. And so you have to like rule out some of these other things, adrenal tumors, some stuff like that. So once you've ruled out any other possibility, they will use a diagnostic criteria. It's called the Rotterdam criteria. And essentially you just have to have two out of the three options and you would qualify for a PCOS diagnosis. So one of the first things is anovulation or like ovulation dysfunction. So if you have missing periods, sporadic periods, or like you're not ovulating regularly, that would be, you know, the first check. The next one is evidence of excess androgen. So it's those male trait hormones. Your provider may look at you and see those symptoms like acne, excess hair growth, hair thinning, weight gain, and they may say, okay, like you have evidence of excess androgens, or they may do lab work looking at like testosterone, DHEA sulfate, like some different androgen hormones. And so that would be another option. The last one is whether or not you have polycystic ovaries, which you have to have a vaginal ultrasound to be able to determine that. So they have to be able to look at your ovaries. And when people hear the word cyst, I know I did, we typically are thinking like those big, like juicy, bubbly cyst. It's not that in PCOS. It's like those little follicles that, because you're not ovulating, you know, everything throughout your cycle didn't get to do what it wanted to do. So you just kind of have these like just little fluid filled sacs that will start building up in the ovary. And it creates what is commonly called like a string of pearls, because you'll just see these little bubbles in the ovary. So it's not like these big, you know, cysts on the outside of the ovary. They're different. You could have both, of course.
Oh, I'm so sorry to interrupt you. But yeah, like that's why if you see me scanning over to the side, it's because I'm looking up some of the things you're saying. And I'm like, because I'm like, wait, like I want to educate myself. I also want to like put a visual to it. That's fascinating, because I too also thought it was just some big nasty, like,
I mean, I think most of us do, but just this year they changed the criteria, because those are the three. So you just need two of them. Like you don't have to have all three of them. So that kind of gives you the understanding you can have PCOS without any cyst on your ovaries. And you can also have cysts on your ovaries and not have PCOS.
Wow.
So it gets really confusing, right?
You're kind of like splitting hairs almost with certain things.
I know. And so, you know, maybe that kind of goes into the pot of why it's so difficult to get a PCOS diagnosis. Just this year, they are allowing people to get their anti-Müllerian hormone checked, AMH.
Yes.
So that one kind of like shows your ovarian reserve. And so what I love about that option is it's way cheaper than getting an ultrasound done. And not as invasive, you know, you may have someone, because either it's a pelvic ultrasound, that it's not going across your belly. It's a vaginal internal ultrasound. And so there's a plethora of reasons why someone might not want to go through that kind of exam. So I love that we're now going to have that option. You can get your AMH level drawn, but if you have ovulation dysfunction and excess androgens, you already got those two out of three criteria. So now understanding, I guess, that the ovaries don't play as big of a role as we typically think, scientists are looking into the option of like, okay, is there a male equivalent to this independent of ovaries? And there's actually several studies that are out looking into that. They're actually debating on changing the name entirely. That's like a whole nother topic, because of that confusion of where our mind typically goes directly
to, yeah, of course,
the ovaries and the cyst and so on.
So we kind of went over how it affects our body. I definitely want to spend time on how we manage this. How can people walk away and start trying to manage and live with, right? Because there is no cure. How do you live with this thing?
Yeah, that's a really good question. That is going to look different for everyone. So I would just be cautious if you're like starting to fall for those blanket statements of like, hey, if you have PCOS, just do this, or it's just this diet. There is no specific diet that is deemed best for PCOS. Same thing with exercise, lifestyle, because everyone is so different. It looks different on everyone. Just starting from like a medical standpoint, there's not a pill option or a medicine that has been formulated specifically for PCOS. We have medications that are available that just happen to help with PCOS. So like birth control, like we talked about in the beginning, metformin or insulin sensitizing medication. Right now, the GLP-1s like Wegovy, Ozempic are really popular. Those help with improving insulin because most people with PCOS have what is known as insulin resistance. So their insulin's not working quite as well. And that's leading to the cascade of PCOS issues. So a physician may prescribe some insulin medications, insulin sensitizing medications. And then there's also medications that can help with androgens. Spironolactone is one of them. So if someone has like really high androgen levels, you know, the hair thinning, the hirsutism or facial hair, you know, things like that, they may benefit from some of those medications as well. And then of course, on the fertility side, there's different options there. Options to trigger ovulation, there's IUI, there's IVF, you know, there's some different things that can be done along that line. But when it comes to PCOS, first line treatment is going to be your diet and lifestyle. And what I find really interesting, most of the time people are told, and I'm sure this is in a lot of other episodes that you've done, you're told eat less and move more. And what I found with PCOS, most of the people that are coming to me, and I've been working, you know, for 5 years in this space, are undernourished. And it's really interesting because they're typically told go keto, go low carb, and they're lacking fiber, which is the one thing that can help us improve our insulin. It can help us lower our risk of cardiovascular disease, like all of those associated health risks, because fiber is in our fruits, our vegetables, our grains. That's where our antioxidants are. So just to give your listeners like a quick, you know, something that can apply to everyone, and you can make this fit your specific needs any way you turn it. What I always suggest is balancing out your meals. So start with your protein source. That can be animal protein. It can be plant-based protein, whatever suits your need. And then adding in your fiber sources. So that, again, vegetables, grains, fruits, whatever that looks like for you. And then top it off with some healthy fats, nuts, seeds, avocado, you know, some oils, things like that. That combination can just truly help your hormones, balance out your blood sugar, and do so many things that can really improve your PCOS. So that would be one of my biggest suggestions. PCOS, when you kind of pull apart the layers, it falls down into insulin, inflammation, adrenals, which is like those glands that help us in times of stress, and then immunity. So you're looking at your gut health and things like that. So I think that it's really important that when we're looking at activity, it's not always more, does not always mean better. So it depends on the person, but I think it's important to move in a way that one, you enjoy, so you'll be consistent. PCOS is lifelong. We currently don't have a cure. It exists beyond menopause. You're going to live with this for the rest of your life. So if you're trying something that you don't enjoy, you're probably not going to stick with it, but also that your body enjoys. So if you're really pushing yourself, you know, to do high intensity exercises, whether it's in a studio or at home, and you're noticing that things are getting worse, that's a really good indication that, you know, that's not the best exercise for you. But at the end of the day, I think just doing movement that you enjoy and that your body enjoys back is really important. And then getting really good sleep. People with PCOS tend to struggle with their sleep. They're also at risk of having sleep apnea. So getting 7 to 9 hours of sleep. And I feel like we kind of live in a society where we put the lack of sleep on a pedestal. You know how it is. So sleep and then managing.
I have a student that has currently come in twice this week. And so today he came in late and I was like, how many hours did you get today? And he looked at me, he was like, 4. I was like, oh, I wouldn't be able to human. Like there'd be no way. 4 hours? Uh-uh. I wouldn't be able to survive.
You know, I've worked with a lot of like moms, you know, they have infants and toddlers, and it's not just moms. You know, you may be in a life season where working on your sleep is not really within your capacity, but you know, that's okay. Like you can get to that when you can. Cause I think with PCOS, what happens is you understand like how big of a deal it is. You're dealing with all these symptoms and you're, you know, maybe miserable for lack of better words. And you think that you have to do all of the things because there's so many things that we could do to make it better. And I see people like really exhausting themselves thinking that they have to do all the things. And if they just do a couple of things, it can be so beneficial.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that I need to do for myself sometimes, just like tell myself to sit down, stop doing so much. We don't have that option so much as women.
Whenever I was at my sickest, I was working as a nurse at the time. I was going back and forth from night shift to day shift. I just never prioritized sleep. I didn't realize like how much of an impact it had on my hormones, my PCOS, and just health overall. So it's a really big, important thing for me. And then, you know, the stress management, I think people hear that and maybe laugh and they're like, how am I going to get rid of stress? You're not going to get rid of it. I mean, stress is inevitable, but we can definitely change things that help us adjust and adapt to it a lot easier. And that can make a huge impact on PCOS. So, you know, if you think about diet, more nutritious diet, moving in a way that fits you and that your body enjoys, sleep, stress management, those are all things that look different for everyone, but it doesn't exactly fit that paradigm of eat less, move more. And so I hope one day we can get away from that messaging, because it's always this idea that people with PCOS, they're the hardest workers in the room. And I've been saying that for years. And so it's like, it's not a matter of willpower. It's not a matter of trying hard enough, or you know, like they've done eating less and moving more. Like, you know, if that was the solution, then everybody would be cured by now. So it's just really figuring out like what your individual needs are, but those are the basics.
Wow, 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 wow. I feel like I just took a crash course in PCOS and I'm walking away with so much more knowledge. And I mean, I can't thank you enough. I know both Stephanie and I took away so much. This is going to be something that I ruminate on and probably write down more questions.
Yeah, well, I'm always here to help. I'm happy to.
I love it. So since you've empowered us so much with this knowledge, I need to know. And like we were talking about, you know, it's not just focusing on the negative so much as it's empowering you through education. So what does women empowerment mean to you?
Ooh, the first thing I think of is giving back and giving to others. I know I became empowered because other women gave to me. And that could be, you know, giving me the knowledge, giving me support, giving me assistance and whatever I'm needing. And so I just feel like giving to others and giving back is how we can continue that cycle of empowering each other. You know, that's one of the reasons why I share so much PCOS awareness and education, because I want to give that back to other people that may have been like me and not realizing that it was a big deal and that it was something that they needed to look into more. That's just the first thing I think of. It's a way that we give in to others and give back to our community.
I love that. That's a great answer. All right. My last question for you before Stephanie takes it away. What advice you would give your 15-year-old self?
Oh, man.
Always love everyone's reaction to this question.
15 was really hard for me. And I think that it was a good year after I had an active eating disorder. And I remember being at that time, I was a really obese, heavyweight teen. And that was not common for me. And at that time, it was like the early 2000s. And I felt just really alone and really just, I felt like my weight was a problem for me and everyone around me. And I really wish I could go back and just talk to my 15-year-old self and one, let her know that she's going to be okay. But I don't even know that I would even share any words of wisdom. I think I would just want to hug her and hold, because like she was hurting so much. And it's like, now looking back, you were talking earlier about the PCOS, are we born with it? There were so many signs looking back. Like I was, even though I was an athlete, I had an active eating disorder, which no one noticed. You know, I was doing nothing no different than my peers that were in lean bodies, wasn't getting my period like the other girls were. There were so many signs that I had PCOS, but none of the adults in my life, none of the doctors or the nurses in my life, you know, picked up on that. It was just, you know, it was just getting on to me for how big my body was. So I don't even know that I would go back and say anything other than you're going to be okay, and probably just give myself a big, 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 long hug.
She'd probably hug you right back.
Yeah, she needed that.
I think we all did at that age.
Yeah.
one big bear hug between all of our 15-year-old selves literally around the world.
Words out of my mouth is like, that's like the simplest, most effective thing that you could ever do for someone. Like, I know when I'm going through really heightened levels of anxiety, I literally just need someone to bear hug me. It's a grounding thing. And like, sometimes I'll just randomly hug Emily when I see her and she'll be like, you good? And I'm like, yeah, I'm good now. You know,
it's so validating. Cause it's like, sometimes like you just, it's not that you want someone to come in and fix the problems or anything. Like you just want someone to like acknowledge your concerns or your struggles and just be validated for that. Cause I don't think we get that enough, especially at 15. Yeah. Like that was a hard year for all of us. Well, I'm
and
sure.
It's crazy. At 15, we're expected to, and especially I'll take this to the grave with me, but I think at 15 as women, we're expected to, how many times were you asked, you going to have kids? When are you going to get married? I'm like, oh, I'm 15. I don't know. Like, are you asking me that? You asking boys this? No, you're asking, what are you going to be when you grow up? Work hard, travel, experience the world. I don't know any women. Very rare.
It's so interesting too. I'm an older millennial. So I didn't really grow up, like at 15, we didn't have social media. I grew up in a really small town. I graduated with 25 kids. That was me and a foreign exchange student. So like we were super small town. And so my world bubble was just what was in my immediate surrounding. I cannot imagine what teenagers are going through now with like the whole world at their fingertips and all that influence and messaging. Yeah.
It's constant. Cause I'll talk to my nieces. They'll both call me like once a week and we'll talk after school. And my oldest niece, Scarlett, she like, sometimes I'll like hear her fingers going on the phone as we're talking. I'm like, Scarlett, what are you doing? I'm like, are you playing that game? She plays this stupid little game where she's like, and my brother is definitely listening to this right now. You don't need to tell her that I put this on the podcast and get mad at her for doing that while she's on the phone with me. I know that you are, but don't do it. It's okay. And I'm like, are you playing that stupid game? And the other day she goes, no, I'm texting. I'm like, can't we just talk?
Yeah, like that way. That's so funny.
We can't. Got to do something else. All right. It's fine. You know, so it's constant. I don't have kids of my own, but I treat them like they're my kids.
I mean, nieces and nephews, they are. They're yours. I don't know. I view it that way.
They're my trial children.
Yes. Oh my God. Well, this was so much fun. You are an absolute wealth of knowledge. It was, I mean, I can always tell a really good interview by how quiet Emily and I are. And very rarely do Emily and I not share stories of our own endeavors. But when we don't, it's because the guest really has something to say. And you fully educated us. I know I have friends that hopefully are listening to this that suffer with PCOS, and hopefully they'll gain something out of this and reach out to you if they have any questions. So I want to know, where can people find you? And do you have anything special coming up that we should keep our eyes open for?
So you can find me at Endocrine Collective on Instagram. That's where I spend a lot of my time. Or you can go to my website, endocrinecollective.com. I've got recipes there that are PCOS friendly and blogs that kind of go into a lot more depth. So that's a brand new website, brand new Instagram page. So it's kind of in its infancy. So definitely come over there. I'm constantly giving away like PCOS resources and education. So definitely check out my website too. There's a whole PCOS research database that I've created with a bunch of studies and just endless amounts of resources, because I want you to feel empowered and able to advocate for yourself. I don't really have a whole lot coming up because I am in my senior year as a dietetic student. I'm getting ready to apply for internships and getting ready for graduate school. But once I finish and become a registered dietitian, I will be opening a virtual private practice. So I will be able to see people all over. And my goal for that is to have multiple disciplinary practice. So I want to bring on nurse practitioners, health coaches, mental health specialists, and help fill in these gaps of PCOS care that people aren't getting in their, you know, clinics or doctor's office, where we can cover pretty much everything except for like physical pelvic exams and stuff like that. So that is the long-term goal, but I'm a good year and a half away from that right now.
Oh, you're going to get there in no time. A year and a half goes by in a blink of an eye.
But that's the mission right now.
That's amazing. Congrats. And I can't wait to see that come into fruition.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, like Steph said, thank you. We were very quiet. I was taking in so much information and I can't wait to listen back and edit this because then I'll like be able to really write notes and like think about things and all of that because I don't suffer from it. But as I always like to say to our listeners, even though you may not suffer with it or it may not affect you, when you listen, you're gaining information and that information can then get passed to somebody who maybe is suffering with it. And that's how we spread correct information and get people what they need. So I think it's really, really important to, you know, just be a student of the world, like I like to say. Learn everything you can while you're on this earth. Why not? But just giant, giant thank yous. I really am looking forward to editing this one and getting it out there. For all of you cats and kittens, if you don't know who we are Cycle Chats. You can find us on our website, www.cyclechats.com, or on Instagram. We are also Cycle Chats, all lowercase, no space. Big announcement, guys. This is our penultimate episode of Cycle Chats. We will be taking a month long hiatus as we get ready for our rebrand. So after Letitia's episode, we have one more coming out and then a month long break. And then we're coming back in the new year better as ever, baby. So 1-1 will be our first new episode of our new podcast. And we're going to finally announce the name of that new podcast on the next episode. So make sure to tune in and make sure to follow along. And as always, we hope you sync up with us next time.